Osiris.
This podcast is in the loop. The Legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris connects people like you with podcasts, videos, and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Check out OsirisPod.com and sign up for the newsletter to stay in the loop about new podcasts and events. And don't forget to check out the new Leftover Salmon record, Something Higher.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Ben.
As all our listeners know, we don't really like each other very much at all. We have to find things that we both like to talk about those things. And one of the things that we both like is ice cream.
Yeah, history and ice cream, that's about all we have going for us. You don't even like coffee, so we don't have that to rally around together. But ice cream, this is great because my favorite brand of ice cream is Ben & Jerry's. And they are collaborating right now with the band Fish and the Waterwheel Foundation to create a limited edition flavor. It's ice cream. If you're a fan of the band, you get the pun. It's a caramel malt ice cream with almond toffee pieces, fudge fish, and a caramel swirl.
And it's so great. I mean, like, you guys know from the show, we've been doing this show for 2.5 years, 100 and something episodes, over 100 episodes. We haven't had that many sponsors. We've only worked with people that we like what they do and what they make. And we love Ben and Jerry's, so this is amazing. And you can help out that charity as well. You can help us out. The Osiris Network is bringing this in. If you want to try this ice cream, you can also get this, which is limited edition. You can get it along with a very limited edition t-shirt that's designed by Jim Pollock, the famous artist of many Fish covers. And a portion of the proceeds for the ice cream and all of the proceeds for the teas are donated to the Waterwheel Foundation. You can get this. And if you want to go to store.benjerry.com, Ben & Jerry's website, obviously, for the rest of 2018, you can get free shipping on any orders over $50 if you use the promo code OSIRIS, O-S-I-R-I-S.
Yeah, you know, and I will definitely, my order will be over $50 because this is what, when I go to a holiday party, this is what I'm bringing with me. Some people bring a bottle of wine, they bring a six-pack of beer. I'm bringing It's Ice Cream. I'm going to support the band Fish, but most importantly, the Waterwheel Foundation. So that is store.benjerry.com.
Bob, are you going to be like the person that brings like their favorite beer to a party and then they get there and they're like, hey, can we open those? And then they drink their own thing they brought?
Yeah, of course I am. I mean, I will be.
I brought some ice cream. Let's not let it melt, guys. Pop that open.
I'm Bob Crawford.
I'm Matt Negrin.
And this is The Road to Now. Very special edition coming to you live from the Russian Tea Room in New York City, adjacent to Carnegie Hall. Matt and I are here today to talk about Dvorak in America.
Antonin Dvorak, for those of you who don't know, one of the great composers. He's a Bohemian guy, but he has such a special place in American history. And Bob, I feel like we talked about this months ago when we found out that I think I mentioned that I really like Dvorak, and you were like, yeah, I love him too. Probably because we're both viola players, and Dvorak was a violist. And the reason we're at the Russian Tea Room is because we couldn't get a studio space at Carnegie Hall, and the reason that I wanted to go to Carnegie Hall is because that's where Dvorak debuted his most famous piece, which is called The New World Symphony, which is about America. But we're here at the Russian Tea Room, and we've ordered the Prince Vladimir and Russian Country Tea. It's a very decadent room we're in. Red booths, lots of gold. It's pretty quiet, which is nice.
This is the place that you come to, I don't know, maybe propose to somebody.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Or you
tell them that you're going to do something terrible to their family and you want to let them down easy.
It is amazing. And we may get kicked out of here as I could see eyes are moving towards us throughout the room as we begin to talk. But Dvorak is important for us to talk about. Well, first of all, he wrote, was it four pieces while he was in America?
He wrote the New World Symphony, the American Quartet, and then a quintet. There was another one.
There was a cello concerto.
That's right, yeah.
And he did not like the cello. Right. That was not his favorite instrument. He didn't like the higher register of the cello. Here comes our tea. It is This is where...
Sugar cherries. We've been given a dish of sugar cherries.
Yeah. Matt and I are coffee drinkers, and we were going to have coffee here, but if you're at the Russian Tea Room, by golly, you better have tea.
How could we pass it off?
Yes. So Dvorak was not a fan of the cello, but he did write a cello concerto while he was here.
Maybe it was easy for him because the viola and the cello have the same strings. So maybe he was able to, like, if you listen to a lot of Dvorak's pieces, they have dominant viola parts, or at least refrains that the viola is given an outsized role compared with other musicians, or other composers. And maybe it was more natural for him to do that for a cellist because it's the same strings. It's just a lower, deeper instrument.
I was reading last night a little bit about Dvorak, and the cello concerto apparently he had an unrequited love. And in fact, he married his love's sister.
Yes.
And there are things in the cello concerto, there are little statements from her favorite works. For example, one of the songs from Tchaikovsky's Onegin opera, which is actually the only opera that my wife and I have ever seen in person.
That's romantic.
Was Onegin.
Kind of an unfaithful way.
he put quotes from those songs into the cello concerto for her, and that's something we should probably read more about and learn more about.
There's all these things that Dvorak does with, you call them statements, and in some cases they're obvious call-outs to African-American folk tunes that he heard while he was living in America, or Native American instruments, references, or sometimes just animals that he would try to mimic. And more than any other composer, this is what I really like about Dvorak, because if you're not a musical person, you can still hear these things, especially if you're listening for them. And it makes his music so fun. And I think before we go any further, I should just kind of explain what Dvorak did in America. He was a Czech composer, Czechoslovakian composer, a real bohemian guy. And he lived in New York City from 1892 to 1895. I think he was the chair of like the conservatory or something. And
it was the American Conservatory, and it was the sponsor of it was a woman named Jeanette Thurber.
Okay.
And she was a wealthy woman. She also she had an opera conservatory as well.
Okay.
And then this American Conservatory, her hope was it would groom a generation of American composers.
Which at the time was non-existent. There was no, and this was like a kind of an existential thing that American artists were going through, was what is our music? What do we have? We have obviously like a lot of old tunes from African Americans, a lot of folk tunes. There's kind of like the beginning of a jazz thing going on, but we didn't have classical composers. There was plenty of history in Europe where all the famous composers came from, and America didn't have anybody. So Dvorak came here, and he tried to, and we can get into whether he succeeded, but he tried to find the identity of American music, and he did this by living in New York City for most of the time he was here, but then also in
Spillville, Iowa, which was a Czech community.
Yeah, and it was like kind of like this outpost for all these Czechoslovakians, but while he was there, he also experienced a lot of Native American culture, and it all bleeds into his music. It's funny because like some of he wrote the string quartet, The American, in like 16 days. He like sketched it out in 3 days, and then he took like 2 weeks to just finish it. Like he just like it just came to it. My interpretation is he just felt it and it came to him.
So we're going to play clips.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
So let's just go into maybe some of the pieces, and
sure,
we can talk about the history that we know as we do. So the Symphony for the New World.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, his Ninth Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about the Ninth Symphony, right? That's the rhetorical question.
Oh, yeah.
That premieres in December of 1893, right next door here at Carnegie Hall.
Bob is not using notes.
And in the... I am not. But I wrote tons, and I left them in the dressing room at the Seth Meyers show. But in the largo sec movement, right, there's four movements in a symphony.
For those of you who don't know how a symphony works, a symphony is four parts.
Four parts. The second part is the largo, which is the slow part, mm-hmm. essentially. And there is a direct, I mean, it's not even a quotation. He plays the Negro spiritual going home. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because his assistant when he was in the United States mm-hmm. was a man named Harry Burleigh.
Okay.
B-U-R-L-E-I-G-H.
Yeah.
Harry Burleigh, who was African American. Mm-hmm. And when Dvorak, so if you're a conductor's or a composer's assistant, you're copying a lot of music, you're running to go get meals, mm-hmm. you're just doing a lot of like busy labor work. Mm-hmm. Well, when Dvorak would get tired, Harry would sing these spirituals mm-hmm. to Dvorak, and he literally put them into
his symphony.
Unapologetically. Here's something we need to understand about Dvorak: is he, before he came to the United States, he was a very well-established, famous composer. Mm-hmm. He was friends with Brahms. Mm-hmm. He was part of that romantic
the elite
And he was known for using bohemian folk music mm-hmm. in his works. Mm-hmm. So when he came to the United States, he wanted to find, what is America's sound? Mm-hmm. What is American music? Mm-hmm. And after being here for not too long, he came to realize with through his relationship with African Americans that the African American spiritual, the slave music, the Native American music of the United States is the sound of this nation.
And it was the closest thing to a real musical identity that America had. And I think that's why he latched onto it. Other than the fact that it's just genuinely, a lot of these hymns and folk songs are just plainly beautiful, and they're group songs, a lot of them. There's so much like meaning in them. It was just kind of like the only thing that America had at the time. One thing that while I was researching, because I knew a lot about Dvorak before we wanted to do this, and I was researching this, and I found this like really interesting controversy, which was that a lot of people say Going Home is this, what they called a Negro spiritual, but it was this guy named William Arms Fisher who actually wrote it after Dvorak wrote the symphony and used the melody to create this spiritual. So there's a lot of like interplay here where it appears that Dvorak was inspired by Berlay and whatever he was singing, and then he wrote that into his symphony, and then someone else wrote lyrics to it, either like in conjunction with Dvorak or immediately after the fact. But I haven't found anything like definitive on it. It's kind of curious, like how much he was drawing from this hymn and how much he was actually writing his own.
So from a book that I have not had the opportunity to read the whole thing, I just found it a couple days ago. It's called Dvorak to Ellington. So there was a connection. It's by Maurice Perez. This is a quote from the book. Dvorak used to get and I believe this is a letter that Harry Berlay wrote to someone.
Okay.
Dvorak used to get tired during the day, and I would sing to him after supper. I gave him what I knew of Negro songs. No one called them spirituals then. And he wrote some of my tunes, my people's music, into the New World Symphony.
Wow.
So, in the New World Symphony, tell us about where do we hear Swing Low, Sweet Chariot?
So this is one of my favorite... this is one of my favorite curiosities about the New World Symphony, which even today is regarded by many people as the most beautiful piece of classical music ever written. Obviously very subjective, but this is a mainstream piece. This is not some obscure cult hit. This was huge. And in the first movement of the New World Symphony, you can very clearly hear a reference to Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Very famous.
You know that if you watch Bugs Bunny cartoons as a child, you know that.
That's public domain license. Like, that's such a well-known theme. So if you listen to the New World Symphony Movement 1, the very beginning, in the piece, Dvorak chops off the words swing low and sweet. So he starts with chariot, which is chariot coming on to carry me, and he uses that to be the beginning of a phrase, like ba 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 da da da. It sounds like, and one of the things that Dvorak wrote about was that America gave him this sense of open space, and this particular riff feels like a bird flying through a plane, like animals in the open, in the prairie, before all the colonizers came out. Whatever it was, no American composer had really harnessed that. And Dvorak was able to take this very well-known African-American tune and work it into the very beginning of his piece. And this is one reason why the piece was received just so well. And I actually... this is like one of the most amazing things. I brought a copy for you, but the text is really small. So this is the New York Times review of the New World Symphony debut at Carnegie Hall. The text is too small for Bob to read. It's very small print.
47-year-old eyes.
But I was trying to think, like, imagine sitting in Carnegie Hall, hearing this for the first time. And by the way, there's all these kind of snobby decorum rules about classical music. And in a symphony, you're not supposed to clap until the very end. You don't clap after the first movement, the second movement, or the third movement. You only clap after the fourth movement. And apparently, the audience was so blown away by every single movement that they burst into applause every single time. And Dvorak had to stand up and take a bow after each one. So here's just some excerpts of the New York Times review, which is called Dr. Dvorak's Latest Work. I'm just going to read a few of these things. The significance of the title From the New World may be briefly explained. Dr. Dvorak came to America avowedly as a teacher. He must have known before he came that we possess no distinctively national school of composition and that there were difficulties in the way of growth of such a school. First and foremost was the cosmopolitan and heterogeneous character of the people, which precluded the possibility of any treasure house of folk music from which directly to draw material. And then later on, this is kind of at the very end of the piece. We are inclined to regard it as the best of Dr. Dvorak's works in this form, great symphony, and must take its place among the finest works in this form produced since the death of Beethoven. And then he says, the American people, or the majority of them, learned to love the songs of the Negro slave and to find in them something that belonged to America. If those songs are not national, then there is no such thing as national music. Dr. Dvorak has penetrated the spirit of this music, and with themes suitable for symphonic treatment, he has written a beautiful symphony, which throbs with American feeling, which voices the melancholy of our Western wastes, and predicts their final subjection to the tremendous activity of the most energetic of all peoples. We Americans should thank and honor the Bohemian master who has shown us how to build our national school of music. This is in response to a Czechoslovakian composer, we would now be like, oh yeah, some European elitist flying into our country, telling us what to like, and he composes the most beautiful thing that anyone here has ever heard. He took the music that black people in America were singing and worked it into something that they probably never even thought was remotely possible. And to me, that is the essence of a brilliant composer. And that, really, just that one piece is why I love Dvorak so much. I love so many of his pieces, but like, no one else can do that. And that's why I love him.
Hey, everybody. The holidays are right around the corner. What do you get the music fan who has everything? Ice cream. Ben & Jerry's has collaborated with the band Fish and the Water Wheel Foundation to create a limited edition flavor. It's ice cream, a caramel malt ice cream with almond toffee pieces, fudge fish, and a caramel swirl. The packaging and a very limited edition t-shirt were designed by Jim Pollock. A portion of the proceeds for the ice cream and all of the proceeds for the teas are donated to the Water Wheel Foundation. The ice cream and teas can be ordered at store.benjerry.com. That's store.benjerry.com. If you use the promo code OSIRIS, OSIRIS, you can get free shipping on all orders over $50 for the rest of 2018. But wait, there's more. A limited edition curveball fish food water wheel tea that was created for the canceled festival can also be purchased online. So please visit store.benjerry.com. Happy holidays. there's something really special about his music, and particularly these American works. I first heard, became aware of him when I was in music conservatory. I went back to school to study music when I was 30. I went through university, and I took a chamber music class, greatest class I've ever taken in my life. And we studied the American String Quartet.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, this is America. This is the Old West. This is, you know, what is it about this? What makes this so American? This guy, like you said, he's from Bohemia. Like, what makes this so American? For a viola to carry a melody?
Never happens.
Never.
We never get it. We never get the lead.
No. Just made him so special.
It's what I also really love about the intro to the American Quartet is the violin has to play the background, and they start, and it starts on like a weird beat. It doesn't even start on the downbeat. It just comes in on this weird like half beat, and they're just playing these two notes, and then the viola takes the charge. That's nice. For us violas, it's nice to get that. It's nice to get a bone thrown at us every now and then.
So Matt, what do we need to know about the String Quartet? String Quartet in F.
String Quartet in F.
Key of F.
I think it was... this is when Dvorak was living in Iowa. He wrote this, he sketched out the quartet, which I imagine means like an outline, kind of like here's the main melodies, whatever. This is in 3 days.
And when he lived, I mean, Spillsville, Iowa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a small town. He was playing organ in the church.
Yeah.
He was drinking beer. Mm-hmm. He loved it.
He was living it up. And I think one of his friends had even told him, like, you're in America, you gotta come here. This is where we hang out. This is like being back home in the old country. And mixed with all these new sights and sounds of America, the New World, I think that's where this music kind of comes from, even though Dvorak is on record saying something to the effect of like, oh, the American Quartet, I could have written it at any time. Like, that's garbage.
On the way from New York to Spillsville, Iowa, mm-hmm. and on the way back to New York from Iowa, mm-hmm. Dvorak went to the Columbian Expo.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And so that's famous for the book, the Eric Larson book,
yeah.
Devil in the White City.
Yeah.
And that Chicago World's Fair, if you will, I mean, which honored Columbus's, right? It honored Columbus's coming to America. That World's Fair is famous for so many reasons and so many people. Teddy Roosevelt, I mean, we could read a whole list. We could do a whole episode on that.
Back when World's Fairs were... a thing that people flocked to and like look anticipated.
But so he goes to the World's Fair. He participates in that. Loved it. He was, I guess, the main attraction for Bohemia Day. Mm-hmm. But I digress. He makes his way to Spillsville, Iowa.
Okay, so one of my favorite things about the quartet is in the third movement. Apparently Dvorak was, you know, we talked about how he worked in these beautiful African-American folk tunes and beautiful sounds of nature, and there's even some, like, Native American drumming that he mimics. There was a songbird that, like, really bothered him, and he was so annoyed by this bird's tune that he was hearing that he wrote it into his quartet. And I think that's, like, a nice, like, a funny wink from Dvorak. That's kind of his humor showing through. So if you listen carefully, you'll hear this bird that goes, da-da, da-na-na, da-na, da-na-na, da-na, da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na. And it's in between kind of like the main phrases of this particular movement. But it's really funny how he does it. And these are like all the little flourishes that Dvorak has. I highly recommend you listen to the entire thing because it tells a great story.
And there are definitely Native American elements in that piece.
Yeah, a lot of the cello and the viola have really good rhythmic parts where they're, you know, dun 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 dun. Like, there's no drum in a quartet, so Dvorak simulated this by having the cello and the viola be as rhythmic as possible. You know what's weird to me is I've played this piece for people, and it conjures up this image of like the plain, you know, the Great Plains, even though they know nothing about it. And that's how good you have to be to write this. And this was like 100 years, 120 years ago, before there was TV and movies, before we associate that sound with that kind of like cinematic, like cowboy western or whatever. He was the first.
Yeah. I mean, that you have to think that's where those guys got the idea. And so he met, when he was in the United States, a violinist by the name of Will Marion Cook. He was a student of Dvorak's. He was a violinist, and he went on to become a celebrated Broadway composer and conductor. He became Duke Ellington's mentor.
That's awesome. That's great. All this, I remember on the birthday, on Dvorak's birthday in, I think, 2000, it was either 2010 or 2011. It was one of his, I guess it was like his 100-something birthday or whatever. I was in D.C., and the Czech embassy did all these events about Dvorak, and one of them was about his link to jazz music. And I remember hearing something like this, that, like, without Dvorak, we might not have jazz. And I think that's, like, even if it's a tenuous connection, it's insanely significant that our most American forms of music came from this guy who came from Czechoslovakia.
Is it not? But it's not. We shouldn't be surprised. Everything in this country came from somewhere else.
Yeah, we were new. We were the new kids on the block. We're the newest country. The last thing I'll say about the American String Quartet is my favorite part of it is the second movement. I always think the second movement is always my favorite part of things, like especially the New World. The Largo is amazing, but the second movement of the I'll just play a little bit of it. It's quiet and it doesn't change.
It's a lento.
Mm-hmm, it's very slow, and it doesn't change except for it gets louder and more emotional. But the same rhythm, which is played by the viola and the cello, is there the whole piece, and the violins are kind of alternating this melody that's really melancholy. But like, so it's like, you know what it is? It's nostalgic for something I've never experienced. That's how I feel when I listen to this. Thank you.
Well, it's beautiful. So maybe we go back and talk about the cello concerto a little bit more. So Dvorak did not believe that the cello was a solo instrument. He did not like that. But in the autumn of 1894, he suddenly decides to write a cello concerto. And I found on this a quote, a letter that he wrote to a friend. He says to his buddy, "I've just finished the first movement of a concerto for the cello! ! Don't be surprised. I was surprised myself, and I still wonder why I chose to embark upon something like this."
It's so insane because, I mean, at least now, is regarded as a not just a mainstream instrument, but it's absolutely a solo instrument. Bach's suites for unaccompanied cello is one of the most, the prelude, the one that Yo-Yo Ma plays, famous and so recognizable. That is, everyone knows that's a cello. Everyone knows that's a solo instrument.
And the concerto is called the Humoresque.
I mean, is this, so my question is this related to the like, da-da-da-da-da-da, or is that a different Humoresque? Yeah. I remember hearing this. So I went to Dvorak's birthplace in outside Prague in a town called Nela Hozevice, about an hour by train. And I remember hearing this kind of folktale about Dvorak, that he would lay by the train tracks and he would hear as the train went by. And that was his inspiration for the Humoresque. This might just be one of those stories that people tell because it's cute and can't be verified, but I laid down by the train tracks outside his home and just lay there for a long time trying to imagine what it was like. And if it's true, I mean, it could be true. The melody is like da 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 da. But this became so famous. I remember when I was learning how to play violin that was a piece that I learned just like as an exercise. It just became kind of this like really nice piece of this, just like a nice melody.
I'm really digging this Russian tea. They say either you love it or you hate it.
I
love it. This is good stuff. Russian country tea.
I would never have imagined that I would be like super into tea, but it's nice.
Do you think that as Russia becomes more part of the United States, this will be more frequent, and maybe Starbucks will offer a version of Russian country tea?
All of a sudden, we have to just have borscht everywhere we go, and no coffee, only tea. We might as well get on board now. American identity is a thing that I think a lot of people struggle with this thing. What is it to be an American, and what is American? And that was a thing that Dvorak took upon himself to try to answer at a time when there was no clear answer. Even now, I think we're trying to struggle with this question of like, what does it mean to be American? Not leaving all my political opinions outside of this, it's very unclear what it means to be American. And I think if you have an opinion on it, then you also have opinions about what it doesn't mean. To apply that to music is incredibly difficult. And in the modern age, there's 10,000 different genres that you could pull out and say like, oh yeah, Taylor Swift, that's American. Oh yeah, Leonard Bernstein, that's American. Like, there's no one thing that we associate with this is the American song, other than the national anthem. There's nothing that we have that's like, this is America's song. One thing that I've always loved about Finland is they have Finlandia, which was a piece composed in the 20th century by Jean Sibelius, and it became like the official, unofficial anthem of Finland, just because there's not a lot of people there. They don't have a lot of composers. And this guy wrote this awesome piece. And they were like, hey, this is our thing now. We don't have that. And so
maybe Born to Run.
I hope not. I can't stand Bruce Springsteen.
What?
I know, but don't let that
go. Oh, my God. This is going to be a pod. We're going to do another podcast.
Oh, no. We're in your hometown in Jersey to do it.
We'll go to Freehold.
Yeah. That's where my best friend lives. Yeah, we can do a Freehold podcast.
What's his thoughts on Springsteen?
He loves him. So I have this Dvorak t-shirt that I love to wear. I should have worn it today. But if you Google Dvorak, D-V-O-R-A-K, and do a Google image search, there's like two pictures of him. And it's like, he's not smiling. He's this stoic, like, look, big bushy mustache. I have this t-shirt of him with that face and then his signature on it. And people always say, like, who is that? And I was like, oh, it's a Dvorak. They're like, who's Dvorak? And like, it's kind of great that nobody knows who he is. It's kind of great that this guy who wrote such great American music that people referred to him as at the time as America's composer, like the great American composer. And you can go to the place where he lived in the East Village right now on what's like 17th Street or something. And there's a plaque outside the building that used to be his house that says the great Czech composer, Anton Dvorak, lived here where he wrote from 1892 to 1895, where he wrote the symphony From the New World. And this has been lost in history. This person who created a sense of Americanism in music, he did so much for the musical culture of this country that it became something that he couldn't even control. It became so far extrapolated from that American quartet, from that New World Symphony, from the quintet, from the cello concerto. And that's what I think a really, truly great musician does. So I don't mind that people don't know who Dvorak is, but I love that his New World Symphony is still regarded as one of the best pieces ever composed, because from start to finish, it's a ride.
It's one of those classical pieces that I can put on at any point, mm-hmm. you know, in any of the four movements, and I know where I am.
Oh, completely.
You know, I've heard it so much.
My friend and I, he's a trumpet player, and sometimes when we go on long drives, we'll sing the pieces, because there's so much call and answer in all of the movements, that we'll just sing them back and forth to each other. And so we'll do an entire 30 minutes from, you know, first movement, second movement, third movement. Third movement's really hard. But when we get to the fourth movement, if you listen to the fourth movement, the beginning sounds like Jaws. And a lot of people think it's Jaws when you play it. It starts with this, like, da-dun, da-dun. And then a really loud and just bold trumpet line
which makes you think, where did maybe John Williams get that from?
100%. John Williams stole everything.
Yeah. I mean, and that's how music works. You know, it's interesting about, you know, we've done this podcast, this episode about Dvorak, and we're not experts.
Not at all.
We're fans.
We play viola.
Right.
But like all violists, we're not that good.
We're not that good. They bury us. They put us in the middle. Maybe if we put them in the middle, no one will hear what they say.
We can just be airbowing the whole time.
They'll just go between two notes.
We're really there to keep the peace.
That's right.
Between the violins and the cellos.
Right. Because they hate each other. Because they're divas. Both divas.
You can never sit them next to each other.
Matt, it's been a pleasure to hang out with you at the Russian Tea Room here next to Carnegie Hall and talk about Dvorak.
It's amazing to think that 120 years ago, the New World Symphony was debuted there, and this place wasn't here at the time, but if it was, I bet Dvorak would have come over here and had a Prince Vladimir and kind of kicked back and enjoyed all the success that he knew was coming to him after he wrote that symphony.
I am a fan of Russian country tea. It is awesome. It is great. And there's more in here, so we'll drink it. And then we'll talk about politics, but we won't do it on here. We'll just talk amongst ourselves.
This is really fun. I'm so glad we did this.